When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I was flipping through the channels the other day, but there was nothing good on, I had nothing to play. So I went to my computer and realized that there was so much content before my eyes. But there's nothing but Netflix in my heart and on my screen. There's always something good that I still haven't seen. But maybe one day we can try to watch the rest.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing but Netflix. We have got a good one for you today. Chappelle, how are you doing this morning?
Rob, I'm great. I'm so excited to be here. This is an epic undertaking in Nothing But Netflix history. Yeah, epic. I'm ready.
That's what I said to you yesterday on our text messages. I said, okay, are you ready? This is going to be epic today because this is a first. Okay, this is actually part three of a three-part adventure that we have been on. Mike Bloom joined us for part one and part two as we watched all of Outlast over these last 2 weeks. And today we've never done this before on Nothing But Netflix. We are joined today by one of the stars, if not the star, of Outlast, here to talk about her experience. Please welcome from Outlast, it's Jill Ashlock. Jill, how are you?
Woo!
Hey.
I'm good, guys. I want to thank you for having me here. I'm very grateful to be given an opportunity to actually speak to the world. Thank you.
Okay, Jill, you reached out and you heard our podcast from last week where we talked through all of the final episodes of Outlast. And I'm sure that you are very aware of what everybody is saying about the shows, and you wanted to come on and have an opportunity to speak about a little bit about what really went on and the reception to you. So I think that this is going to be really interesting to hear everything that you have to say. So thank you for making some time to talk to us.
Wait, people are talking about the show? People actually watched it? Wait, what?
Well, it must be so surreal for you because based off of some of the other interviews that you've done, I read that this was filmed, like a year and a half ago that you all went through this experience?
Yeah. So we're 20 months post the emotions and the actual physical endurance of being on Outlast. So it's kind of like some PTSD stuff coming in there from, oh yeah, we did that. We were, that was a real thing that we did a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Okay. So how weird has this all been for you as somebody who did the show? I'm sure you must have wondered, are they ever going to even put it out? And then to sort of like have so much attention sent your way.
Yeah. I mean, when we finished the show, we all went back, you know, to where we had to leave to get home from. It took 2 days to get out of there. And we were all together and just discussing our experiences and stuff. And we just weren't cognitive to what really happens with TV. None of us had ever done anything like that except for Brian. I had done several small acting bits and modeling and things, but even I was never a part of like a post-production editing process. Had no idea it was going to take so long. And, you know, we continued to have conversations about, you know, is it ever going to happen? Are we ever going to get to see the show that we made? And after about a year or so, I think we all just went back to normal life and was like, I guess Netflix doesn't like what we gave them and it's never going to actually hit the screen for anyone to see.
Yeah, Jill, I have to know, you know, the show is aired now and you're obviously, I mean, it's pretty clear that you're one of the stars, but did you know out there that you were killing it? Because I say you're one of the stars.
It was not killing it.
Whoa. Yeah. Whoa. Okay. Yeah. She was knocking it out the park. If you will. Yeah. she was burning it all down. No. I wonder if you knew.
I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah, that was not you. Yeah. I wonder if you knew that you were out there being the star of the show, because I mean, Rob said one of the stars, but obviously I don't even remember anybody else's name except for Paul, because fuck him. But everybody else, you know, I lost their names, you know, but you stood out.
Yeah. So here's the thing. When we left, everybody there, cast included, networking, managers, producers, audio people, cinematographers, all were coming up to me. You're the star of the show. You made this show. You created this thing. And in my mind, Outlast was beautiful because there are a lot of hours that you guys don't get to see of me teaching and doing survival skills and hunting and archery techniques and water filtration, like tools that I made at camp, construction of our shelter. There's a lot of things that are going on. So in our heads, we're like, we made this beautiful thing and you're telling me that I'm the star and you're patting me on the back and you love me. And I'm thinking I'm this hero because I made the rules. I ran the game. Everybody respected me and what I said, and they followed the rules that I made. And the ones that didn't, they got justice served to them, and everyone was like, yay, Jill's the only one with a set of balls out here to do anything. We're just camping.
That's what the other players were saying, or that was the producers were saying?
That's what it felt like in my head.
Yeah.
But I mean, they were coming to me like, yeah, you were the one that ran the show. You were the one that, you know, kept everything moving. We would have been out there for months if you hadn't got things stirred along.
Yeah.
So you can label it like, you know, the star of the show or whatever, but without the things that I give those cameras, there is no Outlast. There is no show. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that arrogantly. It's just common sense. You have nothing to watch if you take Alpha Team out of that show.
Right.
That's true. Rob had a very similar experience on his show. You know, they said that a lot of those people were out there playing, you know, just what they thought was camp. Yeah. And somebody over here, Rob, he also kind of got a villainous type thing going on. He almost won. So y'all are very similar in that account.
Well, yeah, Jill, I don't want to be, you know, hypocritical because I think that we, like myself and Chappelle and Mike, you know, all felt like that you were the person who really did bring the most energy to the show. And Mike highlighted in particular just how good you were as a person who was able to narrate your experience in the confessional. So we really appreciate what you bring to the show. Now, in terms of some of the like bad behavior that got captured on the show, that I know that you said that some of it was out of context in terms of what happened. So do you want to tell your part of the story?
Well, obviously we have these little things made of paper that we have to put our signatures on. But what I can tell you is that there were at least a couple, if not three or four, cameramen at every one of our camps, four of them. There were 16 contestants. There were multiple game cameras. And we did interviews almost every day. Mm-hmm. So if you do the math, there's about 5,000 hours of footage. And you only get about roughly 7 of that. I know I did a deep dive with my personal life story that was almost 2 hours long.
Yeah.
Talking about, you know, where I've come from and how I became who I am today. You know, you don't get any of that. So just on that note, this other 4,993 hours that you guys are not getting to see, you really think that you can take over 4,000 hours and believe that I'm mean for 7 hours, but nobody else is for over 4,000 that you don't get to see. Yeah. I mean, you got to give them what they want. Right. And I respect that. It's beautifully created. If I had personally been a producer editing, I would have done some things a little different. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't have cast me as the villain. I obviously am in control. I'm the leader out there. You hear the Charlie Beastie Boys constantly referring to, you don't want to piss off Alpha. You don't want to piss Jill off. When Javier goes over there, they get rid of him because that was my rule. You don't take anybody else. And then when Justin destroyed our tarps, I made that rule too. You know, after Bravo and Delta are gone, Charlie and Alpha play straight up games. You do not get to wreck camps, rip tarps, and you don't get to stab your team in the back anymore when there's only two teams left. And guess what? They followed that rule too, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This was fun to watch too, because it was one of those things where, like you said, everybody would be out there camping. And then as you establish more rules, they would kind of just move to your will. And that's why I found it funny that a lot of the cast was sounding kind of bitter about the way you were playing, because it's like they were playing how you wanted them to play. And then when it was them who lost, then they had issues with it. So I thought that was very fun to watch.
Yeah. So the thing about it is, obviously, with all of the footage that you're not getting to see, there are revealing moments of why I either had a confrontation or I took and, as I put it, served justice. You know, you don't get to see what brought that on, but you can identify, if you pay attention to the show, that, you know, we were definitely in an alliance. I gave food to Bravo. We allowed them to forage our shores. Mm-hmm. The mussels came from our banks. You know, they would go down and try to do things or forage, and they had absolutely no skills to achieve that. So I taught them and I gave them these things. And, you know, you see Justin building the raft with the net and the buoys that he found and dug out of a bank. You only see me trying to take back the net from Javier's shelter. And you only see Amber pulling the buoy, saying, these are mine, trying to take them back because he doesn't deserve them after he betrayed us. You know, he was constantly going, you know, against us behind our backs. And until Brian had a conversation with me about how abusive he was. And if you look at all of their social media, you can kind of see hints to back all that up today. But you referred to like the cast having this continual banter against me as this villain. I feel like they're still playing into the character of the show. You know, did they watch this like some of the public and then get sucked into it? So, you know, outside of their own ability to think for themselves, that they forgot what really happened out there.
Yeah.
It's kind of confusing because they've all reached out to me, including Javier. They've all reached out to me and continue to give pats on the back, you know, behind a camera screen. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Jill, can you talk a little bit about your relationship with the other people from the cast? Are you all good, or is there still hard feelings between you and other members from Outlast?
Justin and Amber referred to me as Mama Bear when I was out there a lot. I even made a cookbook and named it that, based on like recipes that we would talk about when we would lay in bed at night. We would talk about food, and I gave them recipes from my kitchen. So I created this Mama Bear's cookbook based on that. And everyone out there knew that too. You know, they knew that I was the Mama Bear. I had the biggest skill set. I was the only hunter, the only one to achieve killing game, the only person to just slay it at fishing. I had the water filtration system. We didn't have to boil our water. It was filtered. I had a sink. I actually called it a sink. Fire starting, you can actually take mushrooms and char them, and they will kindle a fire for you. You know, things like that I had, and no one else did. They did not have those skill sets. So they knew that I was the one, you know, that was going to bring this game to an end eventually. And if they had me on their team, they thought they had an easy win in the bag. And you see, I didn't want to give that to them.
Yeah.
And I chose Amber over money. But the whole cast had that attitude, like Jill's the Mama Bear. And when we got home, it continued that way. People reach out to me and like, I'm really having a hard time. I'm getting hate mail too. And I'm thinking at first, are you seriously wanting to cry on my shoulder about your haters? And I'm like, I don't even know where I can fit you in with my own haters, but okay, I'll take care of you because I'm a Mama Bear. And they've all reached out to me with that same type of compassion and reach. except for Javier. His path of reaching out was to manipulate the entire cast and convince them that he was actually Netflix. And he set up fake accounts, including the Outlast fan page. That's Javier, guys. That's not the network.
Okay, so we don't know about this. We don't know about this. So can you explain this? So you're saying that allegedly that Javier is catfishing as Netflix and manipulating the cast?
It's not alleged.
Chappelle, did you know about this?
I never talked to Javier.
It's not alleged. The producers have sent us all like the texts and emails like, this is not us. This is Javier, guys. Do not send him your personal information. It's a scam. And I actually took it upon myself to like talk to the other cast and make sure they knew. And two people actually did not. They did not get those messages. And that's Jordan and Tim. They had no clue. And we had all, even myself, you know, I feel like such an idiot as the detective, right? Javier is so good at being bad that he fooled me. But I too, like the others, I sent him personal information. My photos and my bios that you see on the Outlast fan page, he only has those because he pretended to be Netflix to fish them out of all of us.
Well, hold on. So then what can I ask? Why would Javier do this again? Allegedly why do you claim that he would do these things?
Because he sucks. I'm sorry. That wasn't for me.
By calling him a homicidal version of Charlie Brown. I mean, he looks so harmless, right? And like I said, he is so good at being bad. And I mean, the best, you look at public figures or even scripted characters on movies, they are really good at fooling their audience into thinking that they're the hero or that they're the ones that you're supposed to feel sorry for. Mm-hmm. That's what a narcissist does, right? I mean, they get you to be empathetic with them and they convince you that, oh, I was done so wrong. And you guys think that because you don't see 4,900 more hours of footage. You only see an hour and a half of screen time of this crazy person.
Okay. So you feel like that Javier has done a lot outside of the show to get stoke the flames after, you know, and we did see him literally start, you know, burn down the camp burn down the camp on the show.
I saw him on Reddit too, though.
Yeah. feel like that he has done a lot to stoke the flames of getting hate online sent your way.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just me. Brian, Justin, Tim, and Corey.
People are hating Brian. All right. Well, this is like a red line.
We got a line at Brian hate. You know what I'm saying? Like, we know you can handle it. You're a boss, but you know, Brian, he quit.
Leave Brian alone.
No friend.
That's the thing that really makes me mad. Like, my skin is made of scars, guys. You can't hurt me. I have been hurt to the epitome of disgusting humanity. I mean, it's not anything that you're going to be able to come at me at, especially from people that are constantly eating crayons and licking windows. I'm not going to seriously. So you can keep on doing that, whatever, if it makes you feel good. And you're getting off of your mom's basement while you're snuggling up in your blanket and sucking pacifier, go right ahead. But these other people do not have my background. These other cast members, their skin's not made of scars. They're not as thick skinned as I am. And it's really damaging their mental health.
Yeah.
And that's mind blowing that people can sit in front of a TV screen and get that irate that they send death threats to somebody that they only saw. I mean, let's say Brian was on the TV an hour.
Right.
And all of the food, you take people like Jordan, he did push-ups. I mean, he's a Marine. I will watch Jordan do push-ups all fucking day. I mean, I don't know.
Right. And this is something we deal with a lot in the reality TV space of like sometimes the behavior that people are exhibiting towards people they're seeing on TV is in some cases maybe worse than what they are upset about in the first place.
Yeah. And I love that people got so emotionally connected to Outlast. Like I said, when we started this, it was beautiful to us. It's still beautiful to us. The experience we got was something most people will never get to even touch on, even through their TV or phone screens, right? Yeah. We got to do that. We got to survive Alaska. And for them to try to tear that down into a negative light from any aspect, whether you hate me as a character or as a person, but if you actually took 2 seconds to look at any of the content on any of my social media platforms, I'm a very likable person. That is not my reality. I don't live in Alaska fighting for my life to try to save my family, Alpha. I'm not out there just fighting over resources and making sure that somebody else isn't stabbing me in the back every day and stealing my food and going to tear my shelter down and compete against me for $1 million. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing that every day, guys. No, it's not my life.
Jill, can I ask you a question about just the production? And I don't know what you can say about this or not, but do you feel like that there's a point in the game where, you know, around the third episode or so, when the idea first sort of starts to, you know, come about of like, hey, we should ratchet up the pressure to try to get people to leave the game. Is this an idea that comes like organically from you all, or, you know, do you get the sense that production is sort of like looking at a watch and like, hey, anything that you all could be doing to sort of like try to move this along would be great?
So let me answer that like this, for safety reasons. When we got out there, we were all prepped with the idea of this thing is not alone. This is not going to be another Survivor. This is something new, guys. We need new content. You know, we don't want to be a copycat. We all were prepped with that idea. And the constant echo in our heads of there's no rules, there's no rules. We all talked about that constantly. It's focused on Alpha Camp because we're the only ones that actually pursued the game with the realm of no rules until I created rules, right?
Right.
So,
and just to put a finer point on that, that from the moment that you all are out there, that it's sort of like, hey, remember, there's no rules.
Yeah. Right. And there, every time we're in an interview and stuff, the questions that are coming to us are that kind of echo kind of thing. You know, we're not being, as you're saying, reminded, but we're having those conversations like, you know, well, have you thought about this? You know, and those questions would come out and then be like, oh, okay. Yeah, we have been talking about this, but I just don't know if we can have the courage to. And you hear me tell Jordan or not Jordan, I'm sorry. You hear me tell Justin when Justin finally is the first one to be like, you know what? I'm not going to sit out here for 6 months starving to death. I have a little girl at home. I want to get back to. And myself, you know, I was like, I need to get home to my husband. I've got chores to do. We got a farm to run. I cannot do this for 6 months. We're not going to survive. Winter's coming. So then Justin's like, you know what? We're going to have to do something. Nobody else is. They're just going to sit on their ass out here and keep camping. And this is just going to be another alone. And we're going to have wasted our opportunity and our chance to win this $1 million. We need to take control of this game. And we have long conversations for days over this. And you all get like 3 sentences. You get him saying, I'm going to go steal stuff. I'm going to go wreck a camp. And you hear me saying, okay, I'm supportive, but I think that's dangerous. And we talk about what, if you go over there, what you're going to take. I definitely was not supportive of the sleeping bags, but we didn't have sleeping bags for the first like week and a half that we were out there. We all survived without sleeping bags. That was a comfort item that came in later. So taking that was not something I felt was that big of a deal because we had proved we can survive without the sleeping bags. Wasn't my idea, even though I'm getting credit for that one too. And then everything else that played out from that point forward was, okay, we have control of this game board now. We have control of the emotions that are in these other camps. They fear us. we are the alphas and we're going to live up to this name and we're going to get this thing done. We're going to go home with this money back to our families. We're not going to sit out here till we just dwindle to nothing and have to fire a flare. We're in control.
Right.
I hate it that people can't respect that.
No, I respect it. I love that y'all had Charlie Camp basically just hiding for the last few days of the game. Yeah, they couldn't let anybody in or out.
They were done, like when they couldn't last anymore, you hear Paul and Nick talking about like, we're going to have to fire flare guns. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We got to get Jill. We got to get Jill. Mm-hmm. If we don't have Jill, we can't win this game. And then when they come to me and I'm still, regardless of people's opinions, I never lied. I never stole. I took things that belonged to me back. I never demolished things. You know, the Bravo camp was completely still intact. I didn't tear that down. Javier did. I didn't set it on fire. Javier did. But we did take our net and our tarps and things that we had given him. We took those back to Alpha.
Yeah.
So when Charlie comes over and they're like, come over here, Jill. We want you to come over here. I knew that's the easy win. And I knew that if I did that, that Alpha would fall. And Justin was already on his way out. And if Justin went out, then I knew Amber would be gone too. And at that point, it was kind of like four is your max. And even Paul set that rule. And I had to abide by that because Paul was kind of the leader of Charlie. And when Paul and Seth came to me and I was like, I've got to bring Amber. And they were like, no, there's no room for Amber. It's you. You leave them. I was like, absolutely not. And I lost my shit. I was like, I'm not going to leave her and I'm not going to abide by your rules. I've worked my butt off up to this point. I have killed it out here. And now you're wanting an easy win off my back. Mm-hmm. No, it's not going to happen. You're going to have to earn it. And I was not going to leave Amber for anything. Not after what they had been through with me. Not after they had showed loyalty to me. And we had stuck together thick and thin. And losing Justin was devastating, regardless of what people think they see on that TV. Amber and I both.
Yeah.
We sobbed for days over that. And the way that he went out, it was just his mental deficit. Yeah. You know, he was in fight mode. Like he was trying to survive. Yeah. And when you get in that fight or flight, if you're a strong bravado male, you're not going to flight. You're going to fight. And so he tore the camp apart, which broke one of my rules. And that's why Charlie didn't take him.
Can you talk through the exodus of Justin from the camp? Because we saw that there seemed to be that there was like some suspicions about Justin. Was he eating the fish? Was he going through the bag? Okay. We never really got we heard his side of the story. But the show did not, and I thought it was an interesting choice because I feel like that they film everything, but they didn't really ever show us the truth about that. Have you come to know which side definitively was true? Justin went through the bag or that he had severe gastrointestinal distress he maintained?
Rob, let's not tiptoe around this. Did he shit on himself or not, Jill? Because we need to know.
I cannot confirm or deny.
Because where was the evidence, Jill? Why didn't he come out with the diarrhea underwear?
So here's the thing. I really do have a cognitive behavioral analysis certification. I went through a lot of criminal justice training to get my license as an investigator. I can tell if people are lying or not. And in my professional opinion, Justin was lying about that. Here's the thing. I think that it probably sparked a really great plan for him because he knew I was onto him. He knew Amber was onto him as well. We had already caught him in lying about the fart, right? We already knew he lies, you know, and he was slipping. His cognition
was he was slipping.
Yeah, he was.
That's a good
one. So when all of that started happening, I really needed proof because I didn't want to believe it. I mean, Justin was, oh my God, he's still my boy. He'll always be my boy. I didn't want to believe that I was losing him. And I set that trap, right? And man, he didn't do very well with mm-hmm. not getting into that bag. The way that things would have incurred if it was just him thrashing around in the shelter does not match up with the displacement of the items. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit too meticulously displaced yeah. to be in, but you got in that stuff.
And have you all had conversations after the show about this? Does he still maintain that? No, I was sick, that I wasn't going through the bag.
So here's the thing you have to know about me. I'm not someone that's going to hold a grudge or dwell in the past. I don't have regrets in my life, because if I did, then I would have to say that I regret who I am. And I absolutely do not. I have nothing to be apologetic for in my life, because I live true to my integrity. And my integrity is that I'm not going to hold you accountable or hold something against you for something you did trying to save your own life, or in a heated situation to where you felt like you were pinned against the wall. If I have a stray dog that I bring home and put it in a corner and it bites me because it's never had human contact, I'm not going to blame the dog for biting me. So the conversations that all of us have had are not, oh, let's harp on this. Let's talk about it. I need you to answer this question definitively. I need to know because I can't sleep at night. The only person doing that shit is Javier. Nobody else is doing that. So no, I have not confronted Justin. I'll never will. I don't need to know. What we have from Outlast is still a grand thing. It always will be. And what we have from here on out from Outlast, these haters are never going to take from us. We're not going to let them. And if we touch on things like what you just tried to ask me, that's digging that little hole and giving the haters what they want. And we're not going to do it.
Yeah. And I'm inclined to believe you, Jill, because everything we knew about you going into this show was exactly what you said it was, right? You said you were a private investigator. So I'm inclined to believe that, because they gave you the credit of being an angler. We saw you fishing. We saw you hunting. We saw you even like the self-confidence classes, the way Amber latched onto you, you could tell that you were instilling that into her, your mother, all that stuff was clear. So if you say that you're a private investigator and you think he didn't shit himself and he was just doing that to get away with this plan, then I believe you. Like I said, you were everything that you presented yourself to be on the show.
I mean, that stuff it's provable. You can go online and look up license numbers.
I think you're talking about Justin. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Right. Oh, with Justin. Yes. So, of course, my opinion, and you're going to have to form your own with that. And you can believe me. But if you don't, does it really change anything? Like, if you're like, oh, she's just a liar. Okay. You don't believe me, but can you at least just see that the show is epic, right? It is an mm-hmm. epic reality TV show, and you guys are so freaking entertained by it, right?
Oh, yeah.
We had fun.
We did.
Joe, one of the other moments that the show had, and this was like in like the like get hyped trailer that they give you at the end of the first episode this season on Outlast. There's the point where Javier has set his own camp on fire. And there's a question right. about is he in there? And I believe it's you who says like, I don't think we're that lucky. Did that get taken out of context? Was that a joke, right?
Of course it's a joke. Amber and I are on the beach, right? We're there watching Javier walk around the corner to go to Charlie.
Yeah.
We see Javier leave his camp after he set it on fire. And to be honest, we didn't know that he had set it on fire until a few minutes later. Mm-hmm. But literally, the events unfold as follows. We do what we need to do down at Javier's camp. We let him know you can go to Delta. You have that option. We're going to let you go to Delta, but you are not staying on this side of our river. You have betrayed us. You're a traitor. You're a liar. You're a deceitful, despicable, horrible man, right? We confront him with all of that. And you guys don't get to see that argument. But before we went in and took back the net and the buoys and, you know, all of that thing conspired, we told him, just go to Delta. Just get off of our side of the river. You're not welcome here anymore. Leave. And we had Hootie Hoo in play, right? So mm-hmm. I didn't care if he was over here or over there, because Paul was supposed to be taking out Delta. That was what we agreed on. So if he went to Delta, Paul's got to take care of him. It was kind of like, ooh, get out of here. I don't want to take care of this anymore. Paul can handle you. So we're down there at the river and we see Javier's got all his shit packed up. He's going to leave. He's going to try to go to Charlie because Delta quit, right? So now we're watching him walk around the edge of the river and he's going to Charlie. Okay, let's go down there and see what's left. If there's anything we can salvage for resources and bring back to Alpha, let's just see, you know, what he left. And by the time we get down there, we see the smoke. We see that he set the Tongass National Forest on fire. I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking how childish and immature and unprofessional would you? I mean, luckily it's a rainforest, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't set a fire like that in a national forest, you idiot. So we get down there and I'm already frustrated with that.
Yeah.
But I know he's over at Charlie. I watched him walk over there. So to hear me say, ooh, is he in there? Could we get that lucky? That's just sarcastic, smart-ass Jill giving you another camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Jill, and you've told us a lot about the issues with Javier outside of the show and some of the things that, you know, he's been, I'll say allegedly again, doing after the show is over. But I don't think I really know that when you say that he is like doing like, you know, not so great things inside of the game, other than potentially like issues with Brian. What else did you feel like Javier was doing while you were out there?
Yeah, so I really don't want to harp on a lot of hate speech on this guy, because obviously the more you stir the shit, the louder it stinks, and that does.
That's what Justin said. Yeah.
Right. Every time you try to confront him, I sent him email. Well, Instagram messages, actually. I sent Javier messages and I was like, dude, you just need to let this go. I don't know what else that you need, but I'm calling a truce. I can put that out for everybody. Screenshot of our messages. And Javier comes back like, oh yeah, I'm not harboring any ill feelings toward you, Jill. I'm just trying to get the info out there to the world. If you would send me another picture of you, if you would just give me your my audition video. He asked for that even after I had called him out. Mm-hmm. And he was like, your haters are here waiting for you, taunting me. And I blocked him and moved out of that. So I know that the more I give you guys, the more he's going to fire hate at me. He's going to go back on Reddit. He's going to get on his little fake accounts. He's going to go back to the Outlast fan page and blast more hate on me. And then I have to have my media technicians get on there and block and delete all day long. They got enough stuff to do for me right now. We don't have time for that. But I will say this. Javier starts out his debut on Outlast saying that he is a nomad loner. He has no family. He has no kids. He's all by himself 99% of his life. His entire team quit him. They didn't even try to go to another team. Tim, Corey, Brian all fired their flares without ever trying to join somewhere else. They were that mentally taxed. And every one of them to this day have personally told me it was because they could not endure one more second of mental abuse from Javier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it was obvious that Javier was the original villain because no one had anything positive to say about him. And then even the fact that, you know, Brian, who could do no wrong in our eyes, who we worship at the altar of, he just left in the middle of the night. You know, it was just like, bye. He didn't tell him. He didn't give him the opportunity to do anything. He just left.
In his head, no, I told Brian he was worth more than that. And I mean, he actually realized he was. I think Brian succumbed to his reality instead of Javier's and was like, you know what? I don't have to stay here and put up with this man. Fuck you, Javier. That's pretty much what Brian said.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, Jill, did you have an opportunity? Have you been in touch with the producers of the show since the episodes have come on Netflix? Because obviously we're not happy with how they turned out.
So all of the producers have spoke with me. And, you know, I'm such a nice person. I held my tongue and I didn't bullshit. Mm-hmm. I did not hold my tongue.
Right.
Not at all. But here's the thing. It's TV. And mm-hmm. I truly believe from the bottom of my heart, none of us thought that society would twist and turn and manipulate this show the way they have. I mean, I've seen things like that I stole the sleeping bags. Did you even watch the show? Like, how are you putting all of this false, just lies out there about a show that, you know, is on your TV screen? And you obviously didn't even watch it, but you're playing the game with the haters. So when the producers had contact with me, they were like, you're still the star in our eyes. We know who you are. You know who you are. There was a lot of support that came in from them. I didn't get contact from Netflix itself until a little later on when they started to get wind of how crazy people were getting online. Wow. And it wasn't just the civilian population. There were news reporters, journalists that were writing articles that were just so far-fetched and unbelievable. And I'm like, you know what? That's them jumping on this bandwagon with the hater train. You see journalists twisting our words, even the producers' words. I've seen different little things where they put in quotations one word, and then they have this whole paragraph. And it changes the context of everything when people read that. But I don't think that they're intelligent enough to actually see through it.
Yeah. Have you gotten any fan support? Of course, aside from this podcast, have you gotten a lot of fan support as well? Or is it all just strictly people looking at you as a villain that they, you know, love to hate?
Oh, no, not at all. I honestly, I would kind of weigh it out to be about 50-50. And I'm okay with that. But the problem that I have is the people that actually have ability to think for themselves, they're not going to get on social media and blast their opinion because they don't need to. They're confident, secure individuals. Mm-hmm. The people that you see the most are going to be the ones that fail to achieve their own stature. And they're jealous. They have insecurities of their own. And the only way that they can validate the emotions that they take away from watching a TV game show is to get on their social media or laptops and blast a person they have absolutely no idea of anything about them. It's really sad. And I go beyond, you know, the stuff that you're seeing on this screen, and I look at it from a statistical standpoint. I've looked at my data. 86% of my haters are white Americans that are 72% male. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. is astonishing statistics to me. And I can put that
Chappelle,
data.
You surprised?
Not at all. I'm not surprised at all. Yeah. Not shocked.
Yeah. But so, Jill, yeah, I wanted to ask you about this. And this is always, you know, a tough thing to get into on the podcast. But, you know, that we have so many discussions about, you know, gender and how men and women are represented on these different reality TV shows. And it does seem as though the audiences tend to have a lot more leeway and forgiveness with our men who behave not so proper on these shows, where they are sort of like embraced and sort of celebrated the male villains of a reality TV show, where women don't seem to get as much leeway in terms of what the behavior that the audience is willing to tolerate.
Yeah, you're right. If you look, let's take, this is going to sound a little weird coming from me, but let's take the Bible. For instance,
okay,
there are over 180 passages in the Bible that say that women are supposed to be submissive. Keep your mouth shut. You do not get to tell a man what to do, and you do not get to teach. But here's the thing. We are the ones that are bearing the children. We're pretty much the ones raising the children, except for these men that are confident enough to be stay-at-home dads. And if we don't teach the generation, then how are we going to raise children? So that is a conflict in itself, right? We are meant to be teachers. But in today's time, especially for some reason in America, there's still this misogyny trying to put women in their place. Stay in the kitchen. Go have a baby. You know, make me a sandwich. What the fuck, guys? This is 2023. And I'm sorry that you are not secure enough in your manhood to see a confident, strong, independent woman and say, like, you know what? I can get behind that. I need my daughter to grow up with that kind of confidence. I want my wife to know that I can stand beside her, that I don't need to be in front of her. I need women in the world to feel more like a Jill and see that it's okay to be strong and take leadership roles and control the game board. The guys out there that knew me and watched how everything folded, they respected me. They still to this day tell me they respect the way I played the game because honestly, they didn't have the willpower to do it. All the people that are watching this show hating on me, the only thing that I can like convince myself in perception is that you have your own insecurities so deep rooted that you can't get behind a woman and support me for being stronger than 86% of white American males.
Ring the bell, Rob.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. Those are some incredible statistics, Jill. I didn't even know you could do that.
You guys want the proof of that. We don't want to allege anything else.
Yeah, please, Jill, I'm going to hire you to determine the breakdown of my haters and see what I can find out. What's the data say?
Let's do that. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is very interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Like 4%, 4% of the people that are putting out like negativity right now are only coming from basically less than a percent anyway. Basically, it's coming from South Africa and over in Europe areas. So Canada, like Italy, France, Germany, different places like that. I'm not really seeing anything above like 0.03%. All of that is support. If you look through my social media feeds on the comments, you can see the different nationalities of flags where they're like, hell yeah, go. You know, I'm supportive of all women that can take on a leadership role and be strong like you. You are so much of an inspiration to women across the world and even men. Like, this is not a sexist thing for me at all. Do you know how many guys are out there right now that maybe they're transgender or maybe they're gay and they have the feminist persona that they feel like they can't be strong because they feel like they're more feminine. So they obviously have to pretend that they're not strong now. That is bullshit. You can be tough, badass, confident. It does not matter who you are. I don't care, male, female, frog. I don't care what you are. You can be strong. And the dictation of the world saying that you can't because you have a vagina, it's crap.
Wow. Okay. Jill, you're on fire today.
Did Javier said it?
No.
maybe a little bit.
Yeah. Jill, can you talk about your relationship with Amber and what that's been like after the show?
Yeah. Yeah. So Amber has definitely proved to be my ride or die. We will be friends forever. I mean, how can we not? And I mean, how many friends do you have that you can say, This woman chose me over $1 million. She can say that about me. So yeah. I'm pretty sure we're friends.
I don't have any friends like that.
Yeah.
I have one friend. She chose $1 million over me.
That's true. Y'all are friends to this day. Mm-hmm. Stand up, Rob. Stand up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bill.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that we handle all of this a little differently. You don't see her on social media as much. It's ironic because she actually knows what she's doing with it. And I don't. Mm-hmm. I didn't have Instagram and all this junk with social media until Outlast. And they were like, you need to go get some content out there. You're going to be famous. And I'm thinking, good famous. So I start Instagram and I do all this stuff to get content out, right? And then I have no idea what I'm doing. So your podcast joked about all my hashtags. I thought that's how you did it. I thought that's how you do Instagram.
Yeah. You might have just been watching The Circle. They do a lot of too many hashtags on The Circle on the Netflix family. Jill, would you do any other reality shows? I feel like that Netflix, especially that they're like, okay, oh, it's all the people from Netflix reality shows. Would you compete on another show?
Absolutely. Yeah. They have not dampened my glow.
Okay.
I'm always going to be this bright star that's burning. I did one interview where I referred to all of us being like the dark side of the moon and the light side. And a lot of us never show our dark side, but we all have it. I freaking give you the whole sphere. 110% of me, genuine, all day long, every day of my life. I don't know how anybody can't be that way. But then again, I don't see very many other people like me coming out of the woodwork.
Neither do we.
Yet,
so. Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. I'm actually in personal contact with the chief casting director at Netflix.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see what's to come. They definitely have me for a little while longer. The contract does not end when the show comes out. So if I'm casted with them, which I'm not saying that I will be, I haven't decided yet. I'm sure it's going to be something even more epic, right?
Yeah. Wow. It'll be tough to beat.
Yeah, and I'm sure people will tune in for you. You know, I basically said that after the first two episodes, I didn't have to watch the rest of it because it was kind of boring. But once you took the helm, it really became like the show shoots up, and it's very clear that everybody says it. Like, oh yeah, once you get to the first two episodes or so, then it really starts to pick up. It's because it becomes the Jill show. And I think that, you know, any other show that you go to do, it would be very similar, or at least people would go and check it out just for that. So I think whatever you decide to do, we'll be watching.
I think that he's probably correct in the sense that I'm not overbearing, I don't believe, but I will take control if the option's there to do so.
Yeah. Jill, one question I had about at the end of the game, okay, you get the word, all right, the game is going to end not with somebody tapping out, but with a race to the meetup point. Were you aware that that was an option that was on the table? And was that a surprise that the game ended in that way?
We were all obviously very shocked. We signed on to a TV show that was called Outlast. And we were told you better be able to survive and outlast your competition and have one person intact at the end to win this money. We have no idea why it shifted. Was it that winter was such a disaster predicted by production that they didn't want us out there, so they needed to end the show because of safety reasons? This was a beta. You know, Outlast has never been done before. Did they run out of money? So they just had to, yep, we're going to end it now. But we were all very shocked. And the thing for me, and I'm not putting down production for the way that they did what they did. They made their choices for whatever reason they did. But there are absolutely no competitions on the face of this planet that involve pinning women against men in a race like this. I found it very strange that that was how we came to an end, that you had two women race three men. But no one's touching on that. And I mean, yeah, there was probably circumstances that, you know, if we had went straight up the cliff, which we would have needed rope to probably do that, and I knew we couldn't do it. But if we had went straight up the cliff and come down on the right side of that lake and just never deterred through all of that Devil's Club walking stick, we never had to worry about the water crossings or the huge trees that were impassable, and we didn't have to go around this and go around that, and we just stayed in a straight line, we probably might have still won. But we didn't have that, you know, we didn't get that option. So we were very disappointed that we did not get to prove that we would have outlasted everyone, because we would have. I had more food.
You'd still be out there.
I would have outlasted everyone.
Mm-hmm.
They came begging for you already. You know, that's the thing. You know, people are talking about the morality of the game. But I do think there's something to say about Charlie basically saying, well, if we get Jill away, then Amber will just be left out there alone. You don't have an issue with that at all. So yeah, that's why I said, no, fuck all.
Right? I mean, that's really confusing to me because, I mean, I realize at this point, like, they already hated Jill and Amber, right? They wanted us to die, and we didn't really die, so that's why they send us all these death threats today, because they still want us to die. But the Charlie team was ready to, as they put it, cut the head off the snake, meaning me, and take me for the easy win and leave my team in the dust. Like, it was like, okay, we're just going to let them sit over there and rot, because without Jill, you're not going to be able to last. And they knew that too. If they didn't have me, they couldn't last. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't have if I had got to continue the game the way that we were signing on to be, you know, and outlast each other, not outrun each other. Yeah.
Jill, one of the producers of this show that we've seen from the credits is Jason Bateman. Have you had any interaction with Jason Bateman during the production of Outlast?
Big goose egg.
He hasn't reached out to you.
He has not. I have not spoke with Jason Bateman.
Yes. But have you heard whether or not he was pleased with your performance on the show?
I have not. But from another producer, I've heard many comments along the lines of we. And I know that this person did work closely in contact with Jason during the production and post-production mm-hmm. as well, I believe. So maybe we means that Jason indeed is. I mean, I saw a meme and I actually shared it. I don't know where it came from of a picture of me. It was one of my old modeling photos from like 2018. And it says something along the lines of everyone loved Beth Dutton from Yellowstone and Ruth Langmore from Ozark, which is Jason Bateman's creation, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone loved these two fiery, badass women, but when the real version came along, no one could handle her. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's freaking wonderful. And I actually had sent that to that producer thinking, show this to Jason Bateman, you know? Show him how the world actually sees that he casted a real life Ruth Langmore for his reality TV show after Ozark was over. I thought that was hilarious and it was genius because I can kind of see how they would interpret that. I'm not going to go murder people. I'm not going to take revenge.
Let the record show.
No murder.
No.
Definitely not. I would, in my interview, if you get to go to like Tudum on Netflix and you watch clips of our auditioning interviews, I actually tell my casting producer I'm harmless as a housefly. But, you know, if you back me in a corner, I'm going to defend myself and I'm going to survive because I'm not a quitter. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I really am. I am harmless as a housefly until you make me not be harmless.
All right. Well, we're not going to do that.
No.
Chappelle, do you have any more questions for Jill?
No, Jill, this was great talking to you. Like we were talking before the show and I was saying, you know, there have been other people from other reality shows who have reached out after listening to Nothing But Netflix and said, you know, really nice things or saying, that they'd be interested in coming on. But you were the first one that we ever said yes to. And I knew that you had specifically requested me. We talked about that a little bit. And so I'm very happy that you came on and that you were a good sport about everything and that we had a good time talking to you.
Yeah. I'll continue to be with the world. If you have a legitimate opinion about the show that actually makes sense, even if it's negatively directed toward me, I'm going to respect that. And you were just so angry with me, but you were professional about
it.
And I had to respect that. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this guy is not wishing death upon me. He actually enjoyed the show. He sees it for what it's worth. And then you can't deny the love that I actually exhibit for my team, my family, the ones that I'm trying to keep intact and survive with on this show, right? And the fact that you just had that intellectual process to think for yourself, I couldn't do anything but respect you for that.
Right. And, you know, and I, again, thank you for your grace on that, because, you know, I can watch the show and say this is a character that I dislike on the show. And then when I see that you're on social media and you're doing your cameos and your Instagram videos, I was like, no, this is a great person. This is a queen. You know what I'm saying? And then, of course, like yeah. I said, I might have been very angry with you, but I was angry with every person on the show. I wanted you all arrested. And that's OK. You know, sometimes people want people arrested, but I would never wish death on you.
Yeah. And we're people who are connoisseurs of reality TV. And I do think that we have to have like some cognitive dissonance of that, like, okay, this person is making me feel something, but at the same time, do I have a show to watch if it's not for this person?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Did I know that my behaviors, me being me, mm-hmm. I mean, I took control because I'm a leader. I made rules because there were none. I served justice because no one else was going to. I mean, did I know that doing these things on Outlast was going to get such a backlash? In my mind, absolutely not. I thought that the world would be able to see that it was justified. The behaviors, the actions, the commitment to give a good show to the world, but also do what I had to do to secure a win for $1 million with my team intact. That was very important to me, that I did not leave my team behind or betray them or betray my own integrity. And I can stand here today and tell you that I did not betray my integrity. Not one second did I ever have anything that I feel like I should be apologetic for. And even the sarcastic comments, comedians get by with the shit every day. Mm-hmm. They talk about school shootings. They talk about racism. They talk about sexism. They put politicians down. They get by with it. But when a woman says something comedic in a heated situation to kind of lighten it, it's so serious. Just lighten up. You hate me for it. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's definitely a double standard. We get that here because we make a lot of jokes at people's expense as well. And, you know, sometimes we get a lot of like backlash. But we've seen other podcasters who are women who do get like a lot more backlash than we do. So it's prevalent all around. But I do think that if people are able to sit down and, like you said, and use their, you know, their brains a little bit and just kind of process this as a television show that you want to be entertained on. Because personally, I would not have wanted to watch this show if you weren't on it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Jill, what's next for you?
Oh, goodness. Well, I am doing a lot of outdoor survival wilderness training videos and stuff in the upcoming weeks with a couple of platforms attached as well. And then some on my own just for followers. So I'll continue to do that because that's what makes me happy. I genuinely want to teach people. I genuinely want people to be inspired to be more than where you came from. You do not have to be a statistic of your traumatic past. You can move forward from things that are hindering you from just traumas and pains. You can let that shit go and be happy. And I want the world to know that. If anyone should be able to sit in a pity party hole from what they endured as a child, the things that they were put through as a young adult, the things that they incurred after being on a reality TV show. Mm-hmm. If anybody has the right to sit in a pity party, it would be me. And I refuse to do that. I will never do that. I think that's what's intimidating the world. So for me, moving forward, I'm going to keep giving that speech. And I'm hopefully going to continue to inspire people that do have the cognitive ability to process what's coming out of my mouth and not what's portrayed to them on their TV screen.
Okay, Jill, you know, on our TV screen, Chappelle and I need to find something new on Netflix to watch next week. Do you have a recommendation for us for what to watch next on Netflix?
Ooh, I like Cowspiracy and Seaspiracy.
Cowspiracy and Seaspiracy. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah. And Fork to Table, okay. I think is the name of it. Documentaries. I'm a big documentary buff.
Okay.
And there are so many good documentaries that are on Netflix. They really do a good job at picking up information pieces to give to the audience about things that politicians, news people.
You say sometimes, Jill, they're good at actually telling a true story.
They are. They are good at giving you good things. Outlast is a good thing, but documentaries are too. Outlast is not a documentary. It is not a documentary. But yeah, I would recommend those documentaries. Yeah. Stay away from reality TV for a while.
Okay. No, we can't, Joel.
Yeah, that's how pay bills. Yeah.
But Chappelle, next week though, the big thing that looks like it's dropping on Netflix is an actual movie, a sequel, Murder Mystery 2, Adam Sandler, Jennifer Aniston back together for a highly anticipated Netflix debut.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch Murder Mystery 1?
Yes, we actually did it on Robin Akiva Nita podcast with Ali last year. We watched Murder Mystery 1.
Mm-hmm. And so are you excited for Murder Mystery, the sequel?
I think it's going to be fun to talk about here for nothing but Netflix.
All right, then I'm all in. I've never seen the first one, so I guess I should go watch that first.
I think you'll be able to follow the plot. Yeah, I think so.
I might go watch it anyway.
I think so.
Love is blind.
Love is blind? Yes.
I mean, that's kind of where I crashed at. I'm old news now. Like Friday came out and it was like, whoo, Jill who? Outlast what? So.
Yes. Okay. Would you go into the pods, Jill?
Oh, wow. Oh, yes. Yes. I would like to be in, what was that one show called? The Cube. Was that it?
The where Circle? They,
Solitaire.
Oh, Solitaire. Oh, yeah.
Yes. I would do the Circle. Yeah.
You're not going to break under that either.
No. No, not at all. Yeah. Absolutely not. Solitaire would be right up my alley because I didn't have to work with a teammate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jill, where can people keep up with you on social media? And not to leave hate, people, okay?
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for throwing that out there. But, you know, I'm most active with Instagram right now because a lot of, I guess, the abilities it gives me allow me to put out the content that I'm trying to put out. Mm-hmm. But if you want to watch like the videos of my spoken word and my poetry and like see the genuine Jill, the heart of Jill, and you want to see more footage of survival skills and how to make snare pole traps and how to forage for edibles and mushrooms.
Oh.
You need to follow me on TikTok.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
TikTok.
I love edibles and mushrooms. So yes. I'm down. I'll follow you.
Yeah. Chappelle will forage for edibles.
And mushrooms.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, Jill, thank you so much. Chappelle, what are you up to this week?
Busy as always on post show recaps covering Abbott Elementary with Gia Worthy. We're approaching the season finale. I think we have two more podcasts left of that. So subscribe to Abbott Elementary at post show recap to keep up with all of that coverage. Puya and I are talking about Bel Air on Peacock. So on Bel Air post show recap, you can find that. And then I'm covering Snowfall FX on, Snowfall on FX with Mari and LaTanya on post show recaps, The Connect. So follow me in all those three places to keep up with that. LaTanya and I are also going to be talking about the television show Swarm. Mari and LaTanya have been covering it, but I'm going to tag in for Mari this week because she won't be there. And then of course on Rob Has a Podcast, you know, bouncing around, doing things with you, whenever you call. So, you know, mm-hmm. That's always fun.
We're going to get together in person this week.
Yeah, we'll be in Raleigh, and so that's going to be a good time as well. And then pretty soon, Ariel and I will be talking about Grey's Anatomy, so people can keep up with that too.
Okay,
that's Jill, still a show.
Jill, that's what everybody
sadly
says. Yeah,
and me too. And I talk about it.
Like I was just getting out of training pants when that came on, so this is like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called job security, Jill. Yes. That's what
it what that is, apparently.
Yeah. Jill, have you ever watched Survivor? Have you ever thought about that show?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. You need to like hold on to your chair for what I'm about to tell you. This is a good story. So Penny is Jeff Probst's casting producer for Survivor.
Yes.
She's a Kentucky gal too, right? She was my casting producer for Survivor when I tried out for Survivor
twice. Yes.
So I
know her from way back. Yes.
Yeah, I made it all the way through the casting process to be on Survivor as a contestant.
What?
And I sat down similar to this in front of my laptop, and I did my casting call with Jeff Probst. And we talked and had a decent little 8 minute conversation-ish, 8-ish minutes. And I got off the phone with him and I was like, oh my God, that was Jeff Probst for real. It was like my first real interview for any of these reality shows or competition shows that I've been a part of in the past. He was like the first one that I had gotten that far with. So being there, I was like, I'm there, you know, I was excited. And the casting producer calls me up and she was like, how do you think it went? Jeff just told me that you just got done doing your casting call with him. Do you think it went good? And I was like, I still can't breathe. I think it went okay. I think he liked me. And she was like, how could he not? Like, I've been talking with you for 2 months. I've talked you up. He's going to love you. He's going to fucking love you, Jill. The next email I get that afternoon is, we're sorry to inform you, but Jeff didn't feel like you're a good fit for Survivor.
What?
Because he feels like you're too nice.
What?
I swear on the lives of my children, I was not picked to be on Survivor because
they
Jeff
blew it.
Probst thought I was too nice.
You definitely need to reapply. Now that you have some footage about to back you up, I think you'd be okay this time.
How could they blow it like this?
They choked. They fumbled the bag,
man. This is the worst thing I ever heard, Chappelle.
Yeah, they had it.
I told you to hold on to your chair.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a true story. And I think I tagged Survivor in a few things just to kind of put that bait out there. Like, you still think I'm too nice, Jeff? Mm-hmm. Seriously.
Do you know what season this was? Do you know what year this was?
I want to say 23. I don't know why that's in my head.
Survivor 23. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I can't honestly remember. I'm probably just pulling that out of my ass, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was at least, I would say at least four-ish, five years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've done.
And I believe you because you're dropping names of real casting people so it checks out. Wow. I can't. Chappelle, I'm furious.
Oh, yeah. This sucks. We missed out and we were robbed. But, you know,
I was robbed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, but, you know, I can see what he's saying because you are very nice. And also, like, your survival skills are very important. Maybe he didn't think that you had maybe that cutthroat edge that it would take. But he was so wrong. He was so, so wrong.
He was so wrong. Yeah. Maybe they're doing it the wrong way. Maybe they need to put you in a situation where it's like, all right, well, now. So what if somebody's trying to threaten somebody somebody that you care about is in trouble? Now what? Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to find some way to get that other side to come out on these casting calls.
Yeah, because I'm just speaking from my own experience, but how many other casting producers and hosts of their own shows are missing epic characters for their next season because they just don't ask the right questions or they don't give that person an opportunity to just calm the hell down? Because I was so nervous.
Right.
That was the first really had a true interview with the boss, you know? So I was very professional. I remember referring to myself as the mama bear. And he was like, well, you know, how do you see yourself as the role in your camp? And I was like, I'm going to be the mama bear. Everybody's going to look to me for support and confidence because I'm going to take on a leadership role. I know I will. That's who I am. You know, I remember saying all these things and he was like, oh, she's a mama bear. She's cuddly. She's a friendly little teddy bear. I'm a freaking vicious grizzly. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Oh, my God. All right. Well, this is going to annoy me forever now, Jill. But this was so nice to get to talk to you. I'm so sorry that you're dealing with so much, you know, so much hate and, you know, people, you know, coming at you like that on social media. I hate to see it. I don't want to see it for Javier. I don't want to see it for, you know, for anybody that goes through any of these shows. So sorry that you're dealing with that. But thank you for coming on and, you know, telling your side of what happened.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys genuinely. I'm very honored that you actually wanted to talk to me and hear me say the things that I've said to you. And I agree completely. I think the world should obviously be spreading more love and less hate. And I don't care who it is. No one deserves to be treated and berated the way that some of us cast members, including myself, are being treated on social media. And I'm not just calling on the trolls here, the keyboard warriors. I'm talking about those journalists out there that are twisting and turning our words, the producer's words, spinning this thing from Netflix to be something that was scripted and fake and horrible and manipulated. And it's a TV show. Chill the fuck out.
All right. On that note, thank you so much, Jill. We appreciate everybody checking out this episode of Nothing But Netflix. You can subscribe to everything we're doing here at Robin's Podcast at robinsonwebsite.com/subscribe. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Thank you.